Welcome to the Culture Riot Podcast, Armageddon Edition. All I can do is laugh. It's been a while. I just had some personal stuff happen that left me uninspired. And, you know, this podcast is a lot of fun, but, I'm a type A personality. So when I have a season going, there's a lot of preparation that goes into it and planning and thinking and trying to get the right guests, things like that. And, you know, I just did not have the energy to do that. So I just felt a little uninspired, took a very long hiatus, longer than I thought. And then you mix in COVID. I did a COVID special, How to Survive Corona. Hopefully everyone enjoyed that. And now it's October 30th, 2020, Friday. Usually I release episodes on a Thursday, but I don't know. I was just inspired right now to record. And this episode is called Here We Are at the Precipice at the End of the World. And I don't mean that literally. I mean it figuratively, because so much has transpired since you last heard from me. And we're at the precipice of the end of the world as we knew it. And there's going to be a new world. And, you know, it's very interesting. I think if you think about it, and I'm not trying to be positive, but this is just kind of how I'm thinking about it, is, you know, regardless of the outcome of this really important election next Tuesday, the world has changed and we're not going back. I've been watching some movies from like back in like 2012, 2010, 2005. And I'm watching these movies and I'm just like, oh my God, it was so carefree. We were so rich and wealthy with entitlement and, you know, hope and, you know, just having fun and just worrying about having fun and going to brunch. And I mean, maybe I'm being making assumptions. You know, I know that wasn't everyone's life, but I just feel like, whew, just 8 years ago, we were in such a more hopeful place as a nation. And, you know, I think there was a collective thought of, you know, the world is your oyster. And if you want it, you can get it, right? So I don't know. And now things have felt so hopeless and weird and permanent. And I'm, you know, friends that normally we would talk about, you know, frivolous things, fun things, you know, where are we going to dinner? You know, we're talking about, should I get a gun? My favorite retort about having a gun is, you know, I can't even, this is real talk. I can't even light a match. So you don't want me to have a gun. So I'm not getting a gun, but you know, a conversation that I have never thought about before that I'm having with my friends is like, should I have a gun? People in certain states, you know, people, friends asking to saying that they're worried about their families, depending the outcome of the election, depending on what state they live in. I mean, this is insane. So, you know, this episode, I'm going to try to keep a train of thought. I'm going to talk about a few key things. I'm just going to lay it out. I'm not going to do any segments separation like I normally do. But first, you know, I'll talk a little bit about Corona, kind of what I went through with Corona. Then I'm going to talk about the election. Whew, something I haven't really wanted to talk about, quite frankly. And then I'm just going to end on what's next for this new world that we're embarking upon after November 3rd. So, actually I will do a transition and segment cause I just feel like that's easier to do, but just wanted to talk a little bit about like, you know, where I've been, why I've taken such a long hiatus and just reacquaint myself with you guys again and say hello. I'm going to note this as a special edition. Not sure I'm ready to start planning and doing a full season again, but I'm working towards that and, more to come. Thanks for listening. Thank you. Okay, just saw the statistic about Corona, about COVID, our global pandemic, worldwide plague we got going on. Very scary. It said that, I'm pretty sure it was New York Times. It said that this third spike, and this is on a global basis, this third spike is worse than the first two, which is very, very scary. Scary for me because I'm in New York City. Haven't left New York, the state of New York, since I think like January. I think it was January. Yeah. I had the pleasure of spending some time in Mexico City, one of my favorite places on earth. Got back from Mexico City, went into a cave, working on a special project. I'll talk about that in a little bit. And then went straight into lockdown. For like, I guess it was like 3 months. It was insane. The thought of like having another lockdown actually really gives me anxiety. And, you know, and it's just me. I don't even have any kids to deal with, which honestly, I'm sorry, guys. I feel blessed. Okay. Woo, because there's just a certain mental capacity you have to reserve for children that, I do not possess, you know. I guess it will, if I had kids, it would come from there, but it would come from somewhere, but I don't have it now. Can't even imagine it. So big shout out to all my friends with kids who survived the lockdown with their children and who are surviving right now. Cause literally you're just surviving right now, without school. I really can't keep up. I don't know what's going on. Is it all remote, couple days a week? It's so different by district, by city, by state. I don't know. It's insane. But I think the collective thought is in the United States, you know, this is going to be a lost year for a lot of people. Like, who knows? We may need to have a collective, like everyone's held back for an entire year of 2020 because of this global pandemic. It's bizarre. But it's been really crazy. So this third spike that's coming, and, you know, the numbers are going up here in New York City. We've been really good. Everyone had a great summer protesting without having to worry about infection rate because everyone was masked and responsible. Also, a lot of the protests were on bicycles throughout the city. They were really cool to see. And, you know, outdoor dining, you know, not to say that it wasn't a great summer. It was a weird summer. Because there was so much civil unrest, and part of the time we had a curfew and there was looting, and, you know, Soho was still a mess, you know, but, you know, at least people felt comfort that it was a low infection rate, which is nice. And I got away, got to go to the beach with some friends because I'm super privileged, you know, but, you know, this, now that it's the winter months, there's no hanging outside. It's freezing, it's snowing. You know, we got some spikes on the horizon, which is very, very scary. And I'm scared. You know, I guess I could do it. I guess I could do it again, the lockdown, right? Because I did it before and it was crazy. It's like, you know, in the beginning, like when it first started, I would like get up early and get myself in a schedule because I was also looking for a job. And I was like, okay, let me get up at 8 and send all my emails and do all my calls and do what I need to do. And then I quickly realized that, I don't know, the day was too long. It was just a long ass day. Who wants to deal with all that? So then I quickly decided that, you know what, I'm just going to lay in the bed until I'm ready to get up, you know, walk the dog and do me. And that's what I ended up doing. You know, it helped that I have a dog. Anyone who's alone in lockdown without a dog, I just want to say my heart goes out to you. Or without a pet, period, even a cat, my heart goes out to you. Like, because animals are just the most precious beings on this earth, especially animals that we are privileged to have as our companions. You know, I could not, my mental health would have suffered even more so without my dog, let me tell you. You know, so I did preview a little bit about what I was working on. If you know me personally, which, you know, probably all of my listeners know me personally because it's probably all my friends listening to it. You know that this whole Trump presidency was really hard on me. Because as a person who's a political person, always was very engaged in the political process and what's going on, what's happening. So, you know, this Trump presidency has been really, really hard on me. I definitely think, you know, like Michelle Obama said, definitely had been in a low-grade depression about it for a while. Because it's like, how do you go from Obama to a racist leading the nation and emboldening other racists? And I felt naive and hurt and almost like stupid. Like, how could I have let myself, you know, get so hopeful and positive about our situation here? Because when you grow up as a Black person in the United States, you're taught to always, if your parents did their job, okay? Not every parent does their job with enhancing and teaching your child how to protect themselves emotionally in your identity journey as a minority. But if you're a Black person in the United States, your parents raise you to be cautiously optimistic and to never ever trust the mainstream system. Never believe. And it's not about like not believing in yourself. It's not about that. I mean, some people do have problems with that. You always have to work on your confidence, you know, that imposter syndrome, if you will. But it's not really that. It's more about like, yes, you can be successful and you can prosper, but know that there are people that are still going to see you as a Black person and look at you as less than. And that's a lesson that I was taught, and I feel fortunate that I was taught that and understood that. And, you know, I'm not a parent, but I'll say to parents, if you're a minority in the United States and you're not teaching your kids that to understand that concept, then, you know, you're hurting them. You're setting them up to be hurt emotionally and to struggle with their identity. So, you know, I feel very blessed that in my upbringing, of course, I had an identity journey, but I did not struggle with that. But, you know, the Obama presidency was so special. You know, it was just something that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. I'll never forget until the day I die, when I have no more memories because I'm dead. You know, the election night, attending the inauguration festivities in DC for his first term. Absolutely one of the best weeks of my entire life. Every single Black person I've ever met in my whole life was there in DC that week. And we were all celebrating and happy and joyous. And and everyone says now, oh, symbolic, da da da. I mean, people that say that and are glib about it now, I think, are really just hurt, you know, because I get it. I feel that too. It was amazing. It was an amazing feeling to feel that, okay, finally, the world stage is going to see who we are and how we are a part of this country. We are this country. And it felt like validation. And I'll be honest, I feel embarrassed that I thought that I trusted that, right? So the hurt of having someone like a Trump elected president was just very, it was just like a punch in my gut. You know, it was just horrific. The worst outcome I could have ever imagined. And it was something that I've really been grappling with on a personal level, as an individual, as a Black woman, as an American. Just horrific, okay? So, you know, knowing that, you know, I had a previous role that winded down. I need to have a whole other podcast episode about that, but that ended. Did some traveling, and then I ended up working on a presidential campaign for Mike Bloomberg. I know, controversial, I know, because of, you know, it's complicated, you know, but you know what? He was a Democrat. He hates Trump as much as I do. You know, did I think he could win it? I hoped so. But you know, from what I saw, the party support went towards Biden. You know, it is what it is. You know, not that I don't have any problems with Biden. I'm going to get into that in a second, but, you know, it was fun work. And it was also a chance for me to work in an industry that I had not worked in before, but had a personal interest in, kind of like almost like a personal hobby, you know, for me. So it was working and it was very exciting. It was well funded. So met a lot of cool people that I normally would not have met. and it was a great time. And then history, you know, history shows, like, you know, he dropped out of the race after the first round of voting up to leading up to the primary, the first round of primaries, because I think he only won Guam. But trust, in the office that night, we celebrated, okay, that we won Guam. So don't feel bad for us. You know, we had lots of wine and food and we celebrated, so it's okay. So, you know, he dropped out of the race, threw everyone a big party, like on a Wednesday. And then by Thursday, I was stuck in my house indefinitely, thinking it was only going to be 2 weeks. And then it turned into, I don't know, let's see, March, April, May. Like, really, I guess I keep saying it's 2 months. Really, it was like 3 months, because people didn't really start venturing out until like June, really. So weird. I mean, the fact that, I mean, I still had to go outside every day because I have a dog. I had to walk a dog twice a day. But it was so strange having to just entertain myself in my house. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I meditated, or you need to learn a skill, you need to get on your hustle. And for me, I felt like, you know what, I'm looking for a job. I'm on this virtual hustle. That's enough work, you know. I do feel blessed that, you know, despite all that was going on in the market, the job market is, you know, it's nothing like I'd ever seen before. I definitely anticipated strolling into something right after my Bloomberg job ended. But, you know, a lot of opportunities because of the uncertainty of COVID just kind of went away. And, you know, it was really hard. I tell people, like, you know, my phone didn't ring for like months, for 3 months. It was so bizarre. So it was just me, my TV, my radio, my laptop, looking for jobs and, you know, conversations with people. I ended up having a lot of phone calls with people. I didn't forgot how much I don't talk on the phone anymore. FaceTimed, had some flirtations with some people. I had some like COVID relationships, you know, like, or I had one COVID relationship that probably under normal circumstances, I probably wouldn't have entertained it, but I did. And, you know, actually got a little attached, but I don't know. It was just not going to work anyway in real life, but it was nice to have some kind of emotional attachment outside of, my friends, you know? So, you know, that was cool. And, you know, we didn't do any like sexting or anything, although, you know, he would flirt and want to, but I was just like, that's weird. So, you know, so dating in COVID era, I think I've just resigned myself to, you know, which, it's probably not any different than before COVID. I'm just going to be a lone wolf for a while, which is fine. It's fine. So, I don't know. Maybe that was a little bit TMI. So that's what my COVID was like. Also, if you know me personally, you know, I'm an amazing cook. So I cooked lots of amazing things. I wish I'd taken pictures and documented, but I didn't. Because people are like, what did you make? And I'm just like, I can't even remember what I made. You know, I made shit like, one day I made like veal milanese. Another day I decided to make shrimp and grits. I made pork chops and, you know, all these side dishes. You know, I just made all kinds of crazy things and a donut cake and breads. And I made my own tortillas one day to make quesadillas on a happy hour with my friends. I don't know, just crazy shit for fun. Like, I was cooking so much that I just basically left my entire pantry on my counter out 24 hours a day. And I was just cooking away, practicing my skills. That was fun. And, you know, I tried not to drink too much because it's like, I don't know. I don't think it's fun when you're home drinking and then you're hungover the next day. That's not fun. But, you know, I had some good wine. My local liquor store, I have actually had a lot of wine. I had a lot of Sancerre. My local liquor store, they got to know me on my trip. They're like, hey, welcome back. And I had my dog and they give him some treats. So, you know, it was interesting. It was interesting. It's so weird because it was just a situation happening that I had never anticipated. I don't think anyone anticipated it. Came out of nowhere, turned the whole world upside down. And then here we are. Also, you know, the civil unrest that was happening over George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, the police brutality outcry. I would have to say that was more emotional and more of how do I put this? Like an issue for me. That was something I had to really sit in myself and deal with more so than the fact that I was trapped in my apartment. you know, just to hear everyone talking about systematic racism and, you know, how, you know, people of color not being hired or not being promoted. I mean, these are things that insidious societal problems that, you know, I'm used to because I think probably because I'm Generation X, you know, talking about with my closest friends, closest Black friends, but not really discussing outwardly with people outside of my personal circle, because it's not necessarily taboo, but it's just like such a big deal. And I used to always, I don't want to say, try to mitigate, but say, you know, I don't throw the word racist around, you know, so people don't feel like I'm pulling the race card. And, you know, something that's great that I learned is, you know, I guess we don't have to do that anymore. We don't have to make people feel comfortable about, you know, their racist tendencies or unconscious bias. Like, you know, like we, I guess what's great is that like now that's gone away. So it's not about making others feel comfortable so that we don't think that about them. And to a certain extent, I've always been outspoken and used my voice, but, you know, very, I've always been very, you know, in mixed company, I'll say. Another friend's amazing podcast, by the way, the Mixed Company, check it out. It's about diversity and inclusion in the advertising business. Check it out. But I digress. So, you know, in mixed company, I would usually try to temper myself and not be as militant about certain issues and things that were happening that I saw and reserve that for my close friends. But, you know, to see everyone talking about it on every news show and every, you know, all these people that talking about it on social media. And it's like, wow, you're wow. Like, okay, so like, I'm not crazy when I spent 6 years at a certain company and basically saved pieces of business and, you know, took over pieces of business for other colleagues that weren't Black because they couldn't do their job. And yet I was passed over for promotions like 3, 4, or 5 times. You know, so I'm not crazy. It was systematic racism. Not that I thought I was crazy. I knew it was systematic racism, but, you know, I just come from a time period where it's just not couth to speak about it and make people feel uncomfortable that you're playing the race card. So that was something that I had to, that really made me feel emotional. And happy that that's something that I see broader society is recognizing, but then also mourning for the person, that person that I was back then that was suffering in silence through doing amazing work and not being rewarded fairly for it. That was an interesting thing that I had to think about and contend with. So I'm going on and on, but you know, these are just, I'm just giving some texture on just kind of some issues and things that I worked through during COVID that I gave some hard thought to. And, you know, it's interesting. We'll see where we go from there. The election. All right. This is the, you know, it's going on. It's happening. I've already voted. I voted for Biden Harris, Democrats all the way down. And, you know, at this point, I just feel like it's either you're either with us or against us. And I spent a good portion of the day actually online, something I haven't done for a while because I stopped doing it for my own sanity. I have stopped entertaining and arguing with Trump supporters. But I had a friend who was in a thread, some local news thread, arguing with all these fundamentalist Christians about Trump. And I found myself joining her, cussing them out, you know, carefully so they don't get in Facebook jail. But I found myself trolling a bunch of Trump supporters today, and it felt really good. Okay. It felt good because this is something so interesting. I'm realizing now, I think like when I had quit trolling Trump supporters, it was because I found myself having to do too much work to explain and provide the rationale of like why they're racist and proof points of, you know, why this president is incompetent. But, you know, it's like at this point, considering where we are with COVID behind the entire world, and he doesn't even care. And considering that he's basically, you know, endorsed white supremacy, you know, I don't have to put any proof points. So really, I could just like let myself go and just call these people what they are, Nazis. And like, everyone knows what I mean. Everyone gets it. So it was actually like, actually a nice, I don't want to say nice, but it was like a freeing, cathartic experience that I actually quite enjoyed that I was not enjoying previously. So, because you know what? He's made the case for himself and he's shown who he is. So anyone who doesn't see that, you're stupid. You're an idiot. So it's just like, and I don't have to convince anyone that you're an idiot. Like, it's just obvious. Everyone knows it. So that's that. Now, does that mean he's going to lose the election? I don't know. I hope so. I'm full disclosure. I had to stop watching the news and stuff, and I don't pay attention to the polls anymore. So I have 2016 PTSD on polls. But, you know, there are certain political writers that I will read up on and listen to what's happening just so I stay in the loop. It's not looking good for Trump or the Republicans, but the proof's in the pudding. We'll see on Tuesday. The early voting turnout is just massive. It's insane. It's like, you know, 60, I think it's 60%. I don't know the figures. I don't know. It's a lot. I don't know. You know what? I just got on this to record this off the dome. Normally I would have notes and stats and stuff, but I don't have that right now. But it's a lot of mofos out here voting early because we are not playing. I mean, we had this whole saga drawn out of Trump, obviously, compromising and trashing the post office with his idiot crony. Who's looking to probably possibly buy and take over the post office for his corrupt company. So, you know, I hate to say it, you know, I support postal workers. They're actually the most, they're one of the largest government employers of Black people, people of color. So I support the post office, but considering all that they're going through right now, I just couldn't trust it. But I did request an absentee ballot just in case. I had a voting plan. I had it just in case because I wasn't, you know, when I ordered it, I wasn't sure we might be in lockdown again. Who knows what they're going to try. So I had that just for peace of mind, but ultimately decided to just go vote in person at Madison Square Garden. Took me an hour. Wasn't that bad at all. Voted for Biden, blew all the way down, and that's that. And I feel good. I feel accomplished. You know, I've had some conversations with people about, you know, because there's more than just the presidential election, obviously. There's all these other seats open. And, you know, I've had some talks with people about, well, would you vote Republican for another? And I personally, Nikia Clements, would never, ever vote for a Republican, period. I have never voted for a Republican. I never will. But I could understand how some people would, depending on where you live or certain values that you have. And normally, I don't really judge that, actually. Normally, if you have a good rationale and reason of why you're voting Republican, I'm not going to be mad at you unless, I've said this before, unless you're a Black Republican, then, okay, there's some problems there. But that aside, I try not to judge. But this year in 2020, all these Republicans are complicit with basically exercising power over the average American person, over the American citizen, and they're interested in fascism and authoritative regime. And I'm against that. And that's what the party has become. And they need a timeout. So I don't believe they deserve any votes from anyone, period. And they need to be taken out of power and put on timeout for a time, especially with this Handmaid's Tale Amy Barrett, completely not qualified Supreme Court justice person they put on the court. And I think a lot of people are actually angry about that because she is not qualified. She brings feminism and women's rights back like 20 years. And she didn't wear hosiery when she was sworn in. She's very disrespectful. She's disgusting. So hate her. So Republicans, you guys, assuming we preserve democracy on Tuesday, because that's what it's about for me, you know, and again, you know, I'll say this. I've said this to lots of people. I'll say it again. Was Biden my favorite? Was he my candidate? No, he was not. But guess what? You know, that's what the primary was for, okay? For me to figure out who I wanted to vote for. And if my person didn't win, actually, I think I did end up voting for him in the primary. But if I had, because actually, I was considering voting for Bloomberg or because I was working for him or Elizabeth Warren, who I liked her policies, I was considering, but they, you know, anyone that I would have considered had already dropped out. So, you know, Biden was the obvious choice. So I voted for him, and that's fine. I'm happy that I voted for him and I want him to win. But for me, it's not about the individual. And people are like, he looks tired. Like, he doesn't want to do it. I'm like, yes, he is tired. He's like 70, late 70s. He lost his son. He's still mourning his son. He had the best 8 years of his entire political career as vice president. He did a lot with Obama. They had a great time. They're like best friends. He was set to retire into the sunset, hang out with his grandkids and mourn his son. And you know what? He's not doing that. This job of the presidency, I mean, Trump is stupid, yes, but he's so lazy. I mean, it is a hard job, okay? You have to be very intelligent and hardworking to be president, okay? And of course, Joe Biden is that. But he didn't want to do that. He should be retired. And he ran because the Democratic Party was behind him. And I know this as, you know, having been an insider for a short amount of time. And he's doing this out of duty because he knows that if he wasn't on the ballot, it would be much harder for the Democrats to have a shot at this election. And he is a formidable opponent for Trump. I think that's clear at this point. And that's why I voted for him. And it's, you know, I wasn't expecting a perfect candidate. I just want to preserve our democracy, guys. It's on the brink. and, you know, our nation will not survive another 4 years of Republican rule. Period. They're looting our country. They're looting our middle class, looting the average citizen. I don't know about you, but everyone I know has paid way more taxes than they've ever paid in their entire life, unless they're multimillionaires, which I don't think I know a lot of multimillionaires. So, you know, unless you're 1%, you paid more taxes than you ever have. There's less write-offs. I mean, this tax code is crazy. And then there's these billionaires, there's so much wealth, trillions of dollars of wealth added to the 1%. Like, that is disgusting and ridiculous. And if you don't see that that's a problem, I don't know what to tell you. Then you just need to be left behind. And I just don't have time for you. Like, I just can't even think about you if you don't understand that and get that. Outside of the racism, okay? And this the Justice Department is completely corrupt. I mean, everyone's around here wanting reform and protesting and angry about cops killing people of color. But guess what? This Justice Department doesn't give a shit about any of that. They've actually reversed Obama-era laws that make it easier to prosecute cops for police violence, policies that were implemented with Obama under Eric Holder as Attorney General. So, you know, there's no hope of any justice with this Republican regime, okay? So they've got to go. They've just got to go. They need to be on a timeout. And, you know, there shouldn't be anyone undecided at this point, but I'm just being clear about, you know, what we're up against. And, you know, it is something that keeps me up at night. The fact that that unqualified wench, Handmaid's Tale wench, was confirmed on the bench, I couldn't sleep that night. I was so angry. And I had already resigned myself that I knew there was nothing we could do about it. But we have a conservative Supreme Court, guys. A conservative Supreme Court and conservative Senate and conservative executive branch ruling us, and look at where we are. We can't leave our homes. You can't go to work. Entire industries are dead. Don't know when they're coming back. There's no investment in science. There's no investment in finding. There's no government investment or oversight of what's going to happen with a vaccine. So, you know, if there is a vaccine, who's it going to get to? You know, the average American? I don't think so. And, you know, our children's, this generation of children's education compromised because, you know, people can't go to school. Kids can't go to school. I mean, this is like, I did not think it could get this bad. It is really bad. And if we do not elect sanity to the office, you know, it'll be even worse because we're so vulnerable to foreign entities right now. I mean, even, you know, this has been confirmed. I mean, our own the entire administration is compromised by a foreign entity. So, you know, imagine what more damage can be done with another 4 years. So it's just, guys, I just want to preserve our democracy at this point. And then I'm going to talk about what's next. And then, okay, let's say best case scenario, we elect Biden. I also think we need the Senate. I think that's possible. I think that's looking good too. But, you know, I haven't looked at anything, so I don't know. I just don't want to know until, I don't know. I just can't. But I don't want to stress myself about it. I already am losing enough sleep. But that's when the real work begins, guys. Right now, it's about preserving our democracy. The real work comes after that. Hopefully, everyone learned a lesson that we have to stay engaged. You have to pay attention to your local elections. You have to pay attention to who's in office. And everyone wants to bitch about the Democratic Party. Okay, if you're not voting within the party, shut the fuck up. That's what I have to say to you. Okay? And everybody's like, we need a third party. Okay, but here are facts, guys. Until we abolish the Electoral College, there's no way a third party can prosper in this country. Those are facts. You can read it. You can look into it. Any political scientist will tell you that that's just, it is what it is. Okay. So we need to then start looking at people, electing people that have like-minded, you know, ideas about how we want to shape this country moving forward. We need more, you know, I was probably progressive people that understand institutionalized racism that is affirmed by the Electoral College, and that we need to get rid of it, or it needs to be amended or fixed some way. I mean, the fact that some place like Montana has as much weight as California, a way more diverse or more power, electoral power than some place like California, is just absolutely disgusting and ridiculous. And that's why we find ourselves in this crazy minority rule, a bunch of fundamentalist crazies trying to freaking control us. It's disgusting. And, you know, if we don't, you know, vote for sanity now, there's just no other civilized path to get out from under them, because they've shown us that they don't care about the will of the people. They'll do anything and everything to stay in power. And the only way to get rid of them is, you know, uncivilized tactics. But I'm not going to go there. I'm going to talk about, let's assume Democrats take over the Senate. Democrats win the White House with Biden. There's a lot of work to be done with the party. You know, a lot of these rank and file Democrats who think that there's still some bipartisanship to be done, they've got to go. And I said this in 2016, and some people said I was crazy. And I said, guys, bipartisanship is over. It's done. For now, it's done. If you're not with us, you're against us. There's no doing deals. There's no compromising, period. They need to be put in their place. So what needs to happen is, any Democrat that's not willing to fight for universal health care, implement universal health care, make abortion law, make, you know, all these things going up against the court, you know, gay marriage or voting rights, all that just needs to actually be law out of the hands of this now corrupted Supreme Court. So for me personally, Nikia Clements, after this election, assuming we approve the democracy, we maintain it, you know, there's going to be a lot of work, and I'm going to have to see a lot from my Democratic Party for me to vote for any candidate. So we're just getting started. The work will just begin. But I just want to get to the work, guys. I want to get there. So I don't know. This was helpful to me. hopefully you appreciated listening to it. Maybe you learned something. I don't know. Maybe I helped you. Maybe it was cathartic listening to me basically spill my guts about all this and where I'm feeling, where I'm at. But that's where I'm at. And the Culture Riot podcast, I'm going to work on a new season. Can't guarantee it's going to happen in 2020, maybe 2021, when we all think magically everything's going to be better. But I don't know. Maybe I need this. I don't know, guys, but we'll see. But hopefully this is a special edition. Hopefully you enjoyed listening to it, and more to come. And please vote. Please vote. And I'm going to push it further, guys. Vote Democrat. Vote blue. Vote Democrat. We need to preserve our democracy, guys. Enough is enough. And I think everyone's ready for sanity. Maybe we can't go back to brunch yet, but, you know, let's at least get out of the house, or let's have a plan to get out of the house. Okay, guys, we need to vote for someone who's going to get us a plan for getting out of the house, because, you know, we've got an administration right now. They're trying to act like pretend this is going away and nothing's happening. So, you know, we see where that gets us. We're going to have a third spike worse than the first two, guys. So I think I'm preaching now, but here we go. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and please vote, and happy Halloween, and you know, happy holidays if I don't speak to you before the new year. And you know what? 2020, everyone's like, oh, this is the worst year ever. Yes, but at the same time, guys, like, this was a year of self-reflection, and you know, all of a sudden everything hit at once, where as a nation, we had to really look at ourselves in the mirror and say, what the fuck are we doing, guys? Why are there people making trillions of dollars and there are people that are hungry? Why do we have an immigration policy where kids are separated from their parents? Why is there systematic racism where you have companies, corporations making all this money off of people of color, but they don't want to hire us or promote us? Same thing with colleges, you know, like, why is there so much inequality? That's not what we want. Right? So why can't anyone have healthcare? Another thing, and then I swear I keep trying to wrap it up, but in one of the debates, you know, Trump's talking about, I'm going to protect pre-existing conditions. Guess what, guys? With this conservative court, if they strike down the Affordable Healthcare Act, there's nothing Republicans can do, Trump can do, to save pre-existing conditions or protect that, because guess what, guys? He never came up with a healthcare law. There is no law. There's nothing. There's nothing. So if the Affordable Healthcare Act is struck down, it's done, and pre-existing conditions are not protected, guys. So we deserve better than this. Maybe we feel like we don't, because people have been stupid and not paying attention and disengaged. But guess what, guys? We're engaged now, and we need to take advantage of it, and we need to be alert and aware. So please vote. Let's get this monster out of office and his enablers, and let's get back. Let's get back to our heady days of optimism and hope and feeling good about ourselves again, because I'm ready to get back to that too. Thanks for listening.